Maybe we made clear.
What Amalek is. Not was, but is.
You brought it up, so...
I'm sure you could help me out. Well, Amalek is actually a descendant of Esau, who was from the beginning was a challenge to the first man, really, who was trying to challenge and go against the purposes of God concerning Jacob. And it's fascinating when you trace his genealogy. He was always against the people of God and against the rights of God. You see it in the case of Esau. Then you see it here at the first war that they have, after they have crossed the Red Sea. It was with Amalek. They were challenging the right of God concerning his people. And as you go through their history, there were always a challenging to the rights of God. You see it in the Edomite, who are another descendant of Esau, or brothers or cousin to the Amalekite. You see it in Doeg, the Edomite, who killed all of the priests of the Lord. You see it in Herod, the Edomite, who tried to destroy the Lord Jesus when he was born in Bethlehem. Then another Edomite, another Herod, killed John the Baptist. And then a Herod that killed James in the book of Acts. They are always challenging the right of God, and they are challenging the authority of God. But now, let's be conscious of the fact that each and every one of us have that in ourselves. We like to have, and that is the doctrine that's going on in the world around us, that we are so great as men, we are so good as men, we don't need to bow to anybody or to any authority, and we should have our own ideas and our own ways of doing things, and we are, you know, they are saying we are gods in ourselves and we could do whatever we want. And we need to be conscious of that, because it's not somebody who outside that also is doing that. But you and I have this danger in ourselves to exalt ourselves to the point and refusing to bow to God, which is the nature that we have inherited from Adam fall.
Just add a little bit of Amalek's history. Yeah, it's Esau's descendant, but if you trace it closely, where Abraham would not have a wife for his son Isaac among the Canaanites, which he dwells, Esau, out of anger, takes a wife from the Canaanites and thus ultimately produces Amalek. And then throughout the generations, you go to Esther and you find that still battle for many, many years under Agag, which a lot of times if you don't study where the history of Agag, you won't come to the fact that he is from Amalek. Descended from Amalek. So you see the generation to generation. So the battle, and there it was sort of hidden under the name of Agag. So we have to be cautious that the flesh wants to hide itself and prop its ugly head when it can. But the other thing is, Amalek was one of the first battle they had, or the first trial they had coming out of Egypt. Egypt is a picture of the world. Amalek, a picture of the flesh. The enemy has great allies with the things of the world and the things of the flesh. They're so closely knit together. We have to be very guided that's how close they are. The flesh loves the world, and they're allies to the enemy, and we have to be cautious of
that. Mm-hmm. In a young man, the Egyptian young man that was a servant of the Amalekite in the end of the book of the First Samuel. Here is it. You find them linked together, and what happened is this. An Amalekite is a hard master. He takes a man who is living in the world, ruined the life completely, until David comes in the scene and rescue and give life again.
Yeah, we have three enemies, and we all know them. The world, the flesh, the devil. And in Isaiah 14, it speaks of where it began. Isaiah 14, it says, talking about the enemy, "How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations? For thou hast said in thine heart," this is where it begins, "I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High." See, he tried to take the place of God. But he talks about how God will cast him down. But that's where the opposition began. We could talk about Babylon. We could talk about all the things, but it began here with the enemy of our souls. And the flesh and the devil just compounds the situation.
And that enmity will climax when the Antichrist will sit down in the temple of God, declaring himself God. So that that's the world in which we live. So, and that is why we said earlier, the flesh in us is an ally of that opposer. And so that is why we need to judge ourselves constantly, to examine ourselves, because elements of the flesh in opposition to God can prop up any time if we don't judge ourselves. So we need to judge ourselves and evaluate things before God all the time, and judge ourselves so that the enemy cannot get hold of these elements.
The Lord Jesus said, "The world come and they find nothing in me." There was no answer to it. When, as it were, tempted, there was no answer.
That's right.
But to us, there is an answer on the inside that wants to jump at it. But thank God we have the Spirit of God to help us so that we don't jump at it.
We have to be very careful that our flesh does not respond to Satan's suggestions.
Can we bring in the Lordship and His provision in this, because Amalek, the prophet's head, the flesh is there, the devices of the world, the enemy Satan loves to use and tease us with the things of the world. Remember what the Lord Jesus said to Peter. Peter, the devil desires to have you and sift you as wheat, but I have prayed for you. So do we see maybe there his Lordship in that sense, that even though we're under attack, he's ever by us. And if we would grab hold of that thought, that he's ever by us. Even when he was being tempted, the angels came to strengthen him and so on. Not that he needed these things, but I'm thinking that there's always an attack, but there's always something provided, provision through his Lordship, that we can cling to in the times of these trials with Amalek.
Scriptures say in 1 Corinthians 10, "There hath no temptation taken you but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above all that you are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape, that you may be able to bear it."
For our younger people, I'm going to ask this question for their benefit. We have grown up in a society that doesn't really, the image of a throne, the image of a sovereign, a monarchy, is something foreign to us. We've grown up under the guise of democracy, the people's rights, and we see the ascendancy of human rights or personal rights in our day. One of the things that we want to get out of the exercise today is to really reverse that notion, so that we do understand that there is such a thing as a throne and authority that's been established from old, from everlasting. That's the first way that we combat this notion of the times in which we live, in which, as we mentioned already, every man does what is right in his own eyes, democracy, personal rights, is that all of that needs to be adjusted, because what we have before us is what God's purpose and counsels are from before time was, is that there is a throne. His sovereign is on it. He rules and he reigns. And so for our younger people, just let this kind of simmer in your mind, is to realize, wait a second, there is an authority. There is one who is ruling. There is one who reigns over all. There is one who has a scepter of righteousness. And then to realize that this whole thing that we've been brought up to think about, of personal rights and democracy and all that kind of stuff, pales into insignificance, because we want to see one person only, the one in whom God has vested all of his authority.